The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
11 minutes after 6, it is Wheels Up Wednesday. That means Eric Peters joins me here in about a half hour. If you have, it'll be less than a half hour, really about 20 minutes or so. And if you have questions, comments, something about a car maybe you're looking at, maybe having a problem and looking for some advice, hey, we talk transportation, politics, and so much more. My absolute favorite article that he has on the site right now is called At Least He's Not a Communist. And it having to do with former President Trump. And, of course, you know, this is really the clearest choice that we're looking at here. And you have your choice of the agenda-based candidate, which would be Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris, the agenda-based candidate for the left-wing agenda, and the non-communist. The non-communist, the one who actually it does not hate the people of America, and who's actually hoping to bring some modicum of freedom. And let me tell you, I get it. I know. I get the emails, and I've even felt this from time to time. Trump sometimes exasperates me on some of the stuff that gets talked about. Some of the economic things I don't think he's necessarily the best on, but it's still better than Kamala. And I know that he's making a big push on tariffs, and one of the biggest pieces of nonsense that I'll hear out of the Trump campaign is that you know, if you put tariffs on China goods, China is going to pay it. No, China may pay it, but it just ends up being in the cost of the goods that we buy. It's always tariffs are always paid for by the customer. We're the customer. And so it ends up being this way. And he's trying to encourage and stimulate the reindustrializing of America. And so that's the way he thinks is best to go about it. But it's nonsense to say that China will pay for it. Yes, we would have to pay for this, and it would encourage more production onshore rather than being offshored. So anyway, that's just it. That's some of the stuff that just drives me nuts. You know, it's nonsense to say that we don't pay it. And if there's a tariff, we will pay it, or we will choose to purchase something else. But one way or the other, our costs would end up going up. But I would imagine it's a cost going up for a particular purpose, for a good purpose, for national security purpose, for for the health of the local economy. But don't say that China is going to pay for it. So that's an example. That's something that Trumpy will do that just absolutely just shake my head. It's like, this is just nonsense. But there are other things that I think are just absolutely sound. And say what you will, he is not a communist. And I have to tell you, that's like the choice this year. The choice is the communist or the non-communist. And even if you have problems with some of the things that the non-communist says, the one who's actually an American, the one who actually is happy with Americans being Americans and behaving like Americans and living like Americans always have, if you can't figure that out, I don't know how to help you. But we'll talk with Eric about it, because I'm laughing. I'm reading his article with this. Yeah, at least he's not the communist. Yes, absolutely right. The choice is that simple. Is that simple. No candidate is perfect. No candidate is perfect. You're looking for, you know, if you can get 80% of what you're looking for, that's good. You know, that's the way it is. I was joking on, I sometimes comment on mishtalk.com. Mike Shedlock is a great financial blogger. I don't know if you've ever gone to his website, but I'll comment there every now and then in which, you know, they'll talk economics, a lot of economics and stocks and things like that. And they talk about Trump and Harris a lot in there. And sometimes they really get into Trump because of the economic nonsense, like I just mentioned. But there's some other economic stuff that actually makes some sense. But you have to call the nonsense what it is, just to be honest with ourselves. I'm not going to sit around there and kiss someone's butt just because he's MAGA. You know, if it's nonsense, it's nonsense. But still, 80% of good is good. You know, we'll take that. He's trying to do something to save what's left of the former United States of America. All right. But I said that, you know, the vote between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris is sometimes, to me, and I'm just kind of spitballing, having fun with this. So just take it in the intent. Okay, the choice between Trump and Harris is like the choice between a minor amputation. Like, okay, you know, it's pretty good, except maybe you'll lose the tip of your pinky finger or something, right? So voting for Trump, sometimes you'll lose the tip of your finger because you don't get everything you want. But if you vote for Harris, you're getting full-blown sepsis or stage four cancer. Cancer in the body politic, you know? It's kind of the way I look at it. That's the choice. It's a pretty simple choice this year. All right? 770-5633 to join in if you wanted to talk about that. You know, it's not very often that I can say that I actually agree with something that Senator Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden actually come out and say together. But yesterday they issued a joint statement, a demand to halt the regional post office consolidations, putting a firm stamp on disapproval on the U.S. Postal Service efforts in Southern Oregon. And they want to halt any further downgrades in local mail operation. So they're putting out this this joint statement yesterday. It's a letter sent to the Postmaster General Louis DeJoy Friday. Senators said they share the grave concern of the residents of Southern Oregon that this consolidation is posing significant negative consequences for both our community and the efficiency of postal services in the region. Now, I will give you an example that happened within my family just the other day, and it had to do with a rent check sent to my my sister-in-law out in the Applegate. Has some commercial property in Jacksonville. And it took 12 days for the rent check to get to her. And this is from the post. It was postmarked. It was postmarked on a particular day. And it took 12 days. 12 days to go from Jacksonville to a different Jacksonville post office box. 12 days. There's a problem in the U.S. Postal Service if that is considered a reasonable service. You know, when you could actually walk it across town, you could put it on a snail faster. You know, we talk about being snail mail. Snail mail would be faster in some cases than this particular way that we're dealing with right now. And I don't know if you've had any experience with that, but 12 days. 12 days, my sister-in-law Margo telling Linda about this, that it took from the day it was postmarked to the day that she got it in her post office box in Jacksonville. So what do you think about that? How are you going to run an economy on that sort of thing? Yes, I know people will say, well, you should be doing online payments. Put everything online. And then Charter will go down, or Spectrum will go down, right? Oh, no, I couldn't make the payments, or else the Bitcoin people are hacking you. I don't know. Just a bunch of, sometimes you just feel like the world is being run by morons right now, don't you? Just ends up being that way. So there we go. Merkley and Wyden being a little less moronish than usual. It's not the worst thing that I've heard them say. And I know I had throw up in my mouth a little bit just, you know, just to say, hey, they actually said the right things. Good. All right. We have to have a climate change and fire update. We need an appropriate bed. Hey, what crusty oldie can we find here?
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Yes, the crazy world of Arthur Brown.
Fire.
Because we're talking about the crazy world of Southern Oregon. Oh, yes. The fire update. All right. Story in the Rogue Valley Times today about fire, climate change. There's all sorts of things going on here this morning. In the Rogue Valley Times today, Morgan Rothborn writes, this is actually at Ashland.news originally, Ashland is going to discuss phasing out small gas-powered lawn and garden engines. So in other words, you have a weed whacker, you have a lawn blower, you have a lawn mower, you have, I don't know, could be like a rototiller, something like that, with these smaller engines. The City of Ashland's Climate and Environmental Advisory Committee inviting you, residents and lawn and garden maintenance people, to an event this week to share their ideas and perspectives on a draft strategy to phase out the use of gas-powered lawn and garden equipment. The city says that residents will have the chance to comment on a plan affecting gas-powered blowers, string trimmers, non-commercial chainsaws, hedge trimmers, and lawnmowers. These various forms of gasoline-powered small engines could be phased out by 2030. And maybe as early as 2026 or 2027 on lots of a half acre or smaller, the release said. An incentive program will be considered to assist in the switch to electric lawn and garden tools. Meeting, by the way, is going to be 5 o'clock this afternoon in the Siskiyou Room, 51 Winburn Way. Now, you want to know who's putting on this meeting? A fellow named Chad Woodward. In fact, you can send a written comment to Chad Woodward, the Ashland Electric Department Climate and Energy Analyst. Now, wouldn't you say, self, that Chad Woodward, working for the Ashland Electric Department, has an undue influence in wanting everything to be powered by Ashland Electric? Isn't that a corrupt program coming from the city of Ashland? I'll put it in scary air quotes right from the start. It's not exactly like there are alternatives put up there. Well, I'm with the Ashland Electric Department, and I say that you should only power everything in your life from the Ashland Electric Company. What, is a city monopoly okay? Is that all right? Is having the city electric company demanding that you run everything only on the city electric, is that a problem? Is that a problem? Anybody in Ashland have an issue with this? This wouldn't be corrupt or anything like that, or trying undue influence. You know, as China builds more coal plants, Ashland's going to have you use an electric blower, and that's going to save the planet, right? Ugh. I'll go back to my earlier comment. You ever get the feeling that sometimes the world is just being run by morons? This is an example of it. But you might want to talk to Chad Woodward at the Ashland Electric Department. Totally nonpartisan, no agenda in there, the Ashland Electric Department. Maybe drop him a note and say, Chad, I know this is your government job, but no. The answer is no. Because you see, when Ashland says they want to discuss and have a conversation about phasing out small gasoline engines in the city, that means they're going to do it. They're just trying to figure out how to screw you over with the least amount of protest. So don't let them do this. Don't let them do this, okay? So that's what's going on tonight, 5 o'clock. Siskiyou Room, 51 Winburn Way. You could talk with the corrupt Ashland Electric Department. And they're probably not corrupt in their normal dealings, but when the electric department is put in charge of deciding what you do with your gasoline engine, I call that a problem. I call that a conflict of interest and corrupt. Okay? All right. What is the second part of the fire update?
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you...
Yeah, we heard you. Okay, fire. We're going to burn. This one out of Oregon Public Broadcast today. Feds to auction off dead trees in southern Oregon that conservationist says are healthy. This is really interesting. Listen to this. Federal Bureau of Land Management plans to auction off 500 acres of forest land tomorrow to log dead or dying trees. But one conservationist says many of the trees are actually healthy. The Boaz and Forest Creek timber sales in the Applegate Valley are meant to harvest Douglas fir trees impacted by recent outbreaks of invasive beetles and drought. Yeah, we've been talking about that. Everyone's been talking about all the burnt, you see all the patches of red dead trees out there, you know, that sort of thing. And this has been something which has been of concern for quite some time. All right, so they want to do this auction Thursday. Medford BLM said the trees were marked for removal based on criteria developed with Oregon State University scientists. So they're identifying trees that they say are dead and or dying, you know, weakened. However, you're never going to believe who the conservationist is who says that the trees that the federal government wants to auction off in the Applegate Valley that are dead and dying wants them logged off. Maybe you will believe who this conservationist is who claims that these dead or dying trees are actually healthy. That person would be Luke Rudiger. Luke Rudiger, the executive director of the Applegate Siskiyou Alliance, said a number of the trees proposed for logging don't meet the BLM's criteria for dead and dying trees. So, you know, Luke Rudiger says that the BLM wanting to log these dead or dying trees, these trees aren't dead or dying enough. But you have to remember, Luke Rudiger is the same guy who stood up in the middle of a meeting a number of years ago and says that, I'm paraphrasing, that he loves the smell of wood fire smoke in the summertime, of fire, wildfire smoke in the summertime, because it means the forest is being restored. So I guess in Luke Ruttiger, executive director of the Applegate Siskiyou Alliance, in his world, the only time the tree is dead or dying is after it has been set on fire so that he can sniff it and huff it in the summertime. And then he knows, then the tree is dead. We'll make the tree dead or dying. We'll just burn the forest so I can sniff it and huff it all summer and talk about how the forest is being restored. And there's the fire update. The fire update for Wednesday, September 25th.
I am the god of hellfire!
Yes, indeed. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED 99.3 KBXG.
Joel here from Butler Ford and Truck Center, and I've got a heap and
KMED.
Merkley, Wyden, coming out and saying that, yes, indeed, they are not going to, they don't want the shutting down or the consolidation of the post office out here in Southern Oregon. They're out there. And like I said, I had my my sister-in-law talking about a rent check taking 12 days. And it was postmarked one day, and 12 days later is when it finally made it to her post office box in Jacksonville. So it's like Jacksonville to Jacksonville, essentially Jacksonville to Jacksonville. And, gee, imagine the vote being put into that kind of a system. What could go wrong? Yeah, if you mail your election ballot this November, you're a fool. You take it and use the Dropbox, okay? Keith Greer says, hey, Bill, I told you that, Bill. You have, Keith? I don't remember you getting an email on this one. You've usually had drunken ravings on other things, Keith, but I don't think you've told me anything about, I'm just kidding, about the drunken raving. May have been fentanyl ravings. But in all seriousness, Keith, Keith says, I've been late on my rent for 6 months because of this before I learned about our mail being routed through Portland. Yeah, a lot of people talking about that kind of stuff, Keith. And so I guess that mail your rent check early, I guess. The thing is, though, if you're you know, hand to mouth and you don't have extra money in case the landlord were to cash the check early, yeah, that could be a problem, huh? Maybe you're just going to have to start delivering checks by hand. Huh? I don't know. That's where it is. That'll be it. We'll be putting out even more greenhouse gases if we do something like that. Oh, and speaking of rent, the state of Oregon has decided that the landlord will be allowed to boost your rent in 2025 if you are a renter by up to 10%. But remember, no inflation. Inflation is cooled down according to the Biden administration, but the rent can go up to 10% up next year. 6:31, this is the Bill Myers Show. And coming up, Wheels Up Wednesday, we'll kick it off with Eric Peters coming up in a matter of seconds.
One of each, Forte VIN 69674 MSRP 21645 Telluride VIN 55.
From Long Island, New York.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
6:36. Yeah, if you've got something on your mind, it's pretty simple because it's Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters joins me, 770-5633, to talk with him and epautos.com. Eric, how the heck you doing this morning? Welcome back to the show. Always great having you on.
Thanks, Bill. I'll do my best to not croak Keeve this morning.
Do your best if you could. Anyway,
Keeve!
By the way, I wanted to just catch up on something. Carol Ann called during the break, and before mm-hmm. you came on, Eric, I was talking about how we have one local environmentalist who's complaining about them wanting to log some trees because they're dead or dying. But he's the same guy that stood up and in a meeting a number of years ago and said, I love the smell of wood fire smoke or wildfire mm-hmm. smoke in the summertime because it's the smell of the forest being restored, right? And
yeah.
And listener Carol Ann said, I wonder if it's like related to Walz's wife, who liked the smell of burning tires over in Minneapolis. Remember that time a few years ago?
I do. Smacks of Colonel Kilgore from Apocalypse Now, who loved the smell of napalm in the morning.
Gotta love that. Gotta love that. And, well, there's a lot of craziness and insanity, but you try to pick your way through it on epautos.com. Mm-hmm. I was reading along with your article last night called At Least He's Not a Communist. And I'm thinking to myself, you just kind of distilled the presidential election down to its basic essence. Are you going to be the agenda type candidate like Kamala Harris, going down the either soft or hardening Marxism, or are you going to be the non-communist who may be imperfect in some ways and, you know, always thrilled with everything that goes on there, but at least he loves the country. He likes the people. Yeah, you know? There's something to be said for that, you know?
I mean, that was the best that I could come up with. Another way to look at it is you can characterize him as sort of a 90s-era Democrat as opposed to what they've become nowadays.
Oh, I know. I know. Well, let's see. Well, you know JFK from 1960, 1961 yep. era, that sort of thing. He couldn't get elected in the Republican Party today because he'd be far too conservative for today's taste, I would
believe. Well, sure, and RFK Jr. couldn't get elected as a Democrat today, which is why he's moved over to the other side.
Yeah, what has happened with our Overton window continuing moving left, 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 left? You don't think that's part of a conspiracy, do you, Eric?
Well, it's a cultural shift. You know, they've had a long time to march through the institutions, as the saying goes, and it's bearing fruit. You know, they've managed to successfully indoctrinate now several generations of Americans who have grown up accepting some of the fundamental principles of communism. You know, let's call it what it is. And they just take it as a given, kind of like people who cannot remember what it was like to fly in an airplane before 9/11 and America became a homeland.
And that everybody has granted. To, well, everybody always had to take off their shoes and get strip searched or groped up by some federal functionary.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Hmm.
And people can't conceive of a time like that or a time when you could just get in your car and drive without having to buckle up for safety.
Uh-huh. Or the other thing about even having insurance, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that because Trump was saying that he wanted to reduce the cost of of your car insurance. And I love that idea. But you pointed out quite naturally is that one of the best ways to reduce car insurance price is to not require you to buy it.
Yes, I framed it in terms of what I call the compulsion cost. Trump said the other day that essentially he would impose price controls on the insurance mafia, completely missing the point. The reason insurance costs so much is because we're forced to buy it. You can imagine what it would cost to buy a hamburger at McDonald's if the government said you had to buy a hamburger at McDonald's.
Yeah, and because there's no incentive to perform better for you or to find a way to cut costs for the most part because you're required to do it. And and I never understood why the state has been really big on getting us to that we have to buy insurance. Because, you know, insurance is always something that you use to protect yourself, generally speaking. And it would seem to me that, I don't know. They'll say that, though, if we don't have insurance, then the state's going to be in charge of having to take care of everybody who is damaged. Well, only if you permit that kind of stuff. Right.
Sure.
How do you do this?
Similar to the argument that we have to have gun control in order to prevent gun-related violence. And that's worked out real well in Chicago and D.C. and various other places. My point being that all these laws tend to do is to punish people who haven't done anything and increase the costs of everything.
Because if you're required to buy something, well, look at health insurance. You're required to do the health insurance. And there's absolutely nothing inexpensive about health insurance right now. It's been going up way above the cost of inflation or the rate of inflation for many, many years, Eric.
Longer insurance. You know, if you want to characterize going to the doctor for a checkup as something that ought to be insured, well, then why don't we use insurance to pay for oil changes and tire rotations, too?
That's right. And it does make a lot of sense, but I have a feeling that your idea of just not requiring it to be purchased may not get much traction, even with the orange man, even though he's has some ideas
so.
And other things.
I hope they think about it. You know, I'm not anti-insurance as such. I'm anti the compulsion. And ironically, if you think about it, if you could say no, then insurance costs would go down and insurance would make more sense. I would have no problem with buying a basic liability policy for my vehicles if it cost me $150 or $200 a month or a year, I should say, which is reasonable. And most people would do that because, you know, the proportionality of the expense relative to the risk is such that it's a favorable transaction. But, you know, if you're looking at $2,000 a year and you have no claims, you haven't even got any seatbelt tickets, and you're looking at having to pay an amount that ends up being equivalent to a third or half what you paid for the vehicle after 8, 9, or 10 years, it really isn't worth it, is it?
And look at what has happened in some of the areas such as Springfield, Ohio, in which you had 50,000 people living peacefully and then 20,000 Haitians get dumped into it.
Yep.
And their car insurance rates have doubled or tripled in some cases because of the insane behavior of when you bring the third world into the first world and then don't tell them how to live like first worlders. Interesting.
Yep. There are many facets to this. Another one that I find particularly objectionable is that the insurance mafia is a private, for-profit mafia. You could at least make a case, if you're on the socialist side of things, that, well, we'll have mandatory insurance as some sort of a state-sponsored boondoggle. I mean, I'm not for that, but I'm just saying there's something really insufferable about the insurance mafia using the power of the state to line its pockets such that we have to watch one endless insufferable commercial on TV about how much we'll save if we hand over money to the insurance mafia.
Yeah, although there are great differences between some of the companies. It is fascinating that some companies were able to provide insurance from my car. Now, I have two drivers, yeah. Three old vehicles, and I had no collision. Now, for me, it was like $1,500 a year is what I was paying, mm-hmm. and then got it knocked down to about $800, you know, this year. So there is some competition there. But the fact is, as long as you are required to do it, the insurance companies kind of know you're over a barrel. Same with health insurance,
sure.
too. When there's only one or two health insurance providers in a particular area, where are you going, right?
Exactly. And a new phenomenon that apparently is becoming a general thing is having to shop for insurance every year. You know, I've experienced this myself. You buy a policy this year, and the rate is reasonable, and at the end of the year, they send you your renewal, and it's gone up by 20%. You call them up and say, why? Well, no particular reason, just because we can. So then you have to shop around and find another company to get it back down to a reasonable level again.
I'm thinking what there should be is car insurance companies that do not take electric vehicle policies, okay? And the reason for this is that they're much heavier, they're much more expensive to repair, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, there should be an insurance company that just calls itself Beaters or Us Insurance Policies.
Well, it's just about proportionality. You're yeah. absolutely right. You know, why should you and I, who drive old beaters, have to absorb the liability costs of $50,000 up vehicles, whether they're EVs or not, that are that much more expensive to repair and replace? You know, I've got a vehicle that's worth maybe $5,000. Shouldn't my policy be in accordance with the value of the vehicle as well as my personal risk?
You know, it does make you think that, you know, perhaps there's a better case to be made of actually socializing this rather than having it out of the private market, because a mandatory private market is in some ways more tyrannical, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because they're rapacious. You know, they've got every incentive to mulk you as hard and as often as they possibly can.
Yep, giving it to you good and hard because mm-hmm. you got to buy it, that kind of thing. All right. We'll set that aside. That's called At Least He's Not a Communist. And there's a lot more to it, too. But I was laughing. You make me laugh, too, as I'm reading some of the stuff.
Well, I do try.
Yeah, but the choice truly is serious as a heart attack. And this is one of the simplest choices for voting for president that I've ever had in my entire lifetime. So we'll just kind of set it aside there. Now then, this is something you and I have talked about. New article you just put up today.
Mm-hmm.
How long is a lifetime? And I first experienced this with the 2006 Passat a number of years ago when I took it into a car dealership to say, hey, you know, I would like to have the transmission fluid changed. And they called me up and they said, oh, you don't have to change the transmission fluid because it's plugged. It even has a sticker on it. It says it's lifetime transmission fluid.
Yep.
And I said, that doesn't make sense. There is no such thing as a lifetime transmission fluid. And I still have to change it now. I have to get that done. It's a very low mileage vehicle. But still, I'm looking at this and what are they doing, Eric? Help us figure this out.
Well, let's preface this by saying it's kind of like when Slick Willie said, it depends on what your definition of sexual relations is.
Ah.
It depends on what is, right? Yes.
Yeah.
It is a lifetime, just not forever. You know, they want you to believe, they want to sell you on this idea of low to minimal maintenance costs. That's a big deal when people go car shopping. Oh, look, I won't have to spend money on things like having the transmission fluid replaced, coolant, and so on. Essentially, all I have to worry about is gas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the motive for doing that. But the lifetime is for as long as the warranty lasts. Generally, that's what they really mean by that.
Oh, they're calculating that out. Then, in other words, kind of taking the actuaries of the transmission or the engine, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they do their own internal durability studies, and they know pretty much how long, for example, a transmission is going to last in the car on average, and assuming that the fluid has never changed. And then they offer you your warranty in accordance. They don't just pull that number out of a hat. And what will end up happening, you'll pay for those low maintenance costs and down the road repair and replacement costs. So, you know, rather than spend $100 to have your transmission's fluid and filter replaced, that's important. The filter mm-hmm. is really important. you'll pay $4,000 for a new transmission at 110,000 miles.
Now, I don't believe anything when I see these manufacturers now talking about these extended oil change, these oil change changing schedules on, you know, in some cases going up to 10,000 miles, 12,000 miles, and you know, especially when I see these diesel trucks that they're saying, oh, that's okay, you can just change the oil every 12,000 miles. And I'm thinking, yep, and I'm going to see your motor being torn apart by one of these guys on YouTube that's showing how sludgy it got over the years.
Yeah, it's exactly the same issue, and it's actually even a more critical issue because so many modern engines now are either turbocharged or they have some form of variable valve or cam timing in them. And those typically are driven by oil pressure, and they have very, very small passages within them. And you can imagine what will happen when varnish or a chunk of some debris clogs up one of those passages, and then boom, you're looking at a lot more than the cost of a $50 oil change.
So how often would you be changing oil if you are a standard? And this is the other part. Very few people should be using the highway mileage time for changing their oil and filter. Almost all of us are in the stop-and-go driving and lots of warm-up and cool-downs, lots of cycles, lots of short trips. That's the way most of us tend to operate.
Yeah, that's another bit of disingenuousness. They market on the outer end those high mileage intervals based on what they characterize as normal use. But for most of us, it's actually heavy use or heavy-duty use. If you look and read the fine print, in the paperwork that's associated with service intervals. I personally do it once a year, every 5,000 miles, and that's just me.
Okay, I do it 3,000 miles on the PT in my stop-and-go driving, and things are going good. 100,000 miles, and I took the valve cover off not too recently, and I'm seeing practically no varnish at almost 100,000 miles, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yep, and to get back to the transmission thing, the really important thing with transmission fluid changes is by taking off the pan, you get at the filter, and you want that filter to be changed out because eventually, inevitably, that filter is going to get clogged up with debris. And when that happens, there's a bypass in the system that just allows the fluid to bypass the filter. So now you're getting unfiltered fluid circulating throughout your transmission, which is potentially catastrophic.
Yeah, all sorts of little chunkies going up into that valve body then. Now, shouldn't you really... Isn't the automatic transmission something that would really be a better idea to take to a shop and have them do the flush? And when I say the flush, in which they're able to put new fluid in but generally suck it out at the same time because if you just drop the pan, you're not able to get all the fluid that's inside the torque converter, you know, the donut-shaped part.
Well, yeah, and it's a messy job. You know, most vehicles made since the 60s don't even have a drain plug. So in order to change the fluid out of the pan, you have to lower the pan, and that's inevitably a big obnoxious mess. And as you say, you'll only be able to change out roughly 3 to 5 quarts, depending on the transmission, when you do it that way. So yeah, there's something to be said for it. On the other hand, you know, if you do it fairly regularly, you're replacing the filter, which is important, and if you do it every 3-4 years-ish, you're keeping the fluid current, and that should be enough. But really, it comes down to how willing you are to get underneath the car and get dirty.
So when they talk about lifetime, a lifetime of the warranty, or maybe your life, maybe just the lifetime of the car until it blows up, and then the lifetime's over.
Yeah,
okay?
And
pretty
again,
simple.
I think the really important point for people to understand is the just staggering replacement costs of components like transmissions these days. It's not like back when you and I were young and you could get a new GM Turbo Hydro 350 for $500. You know, you're now looking at even $10,000 to have a transmission replaced.
And several $1,000s even for a good used one that you see. It's you know, the days of just a few $100 here and there. You're right. You're right. It was a very different time. Heck, you get an engine for just a few $100 sometimes.
Sure.
Sometimes they give you an engine. You have a friend that had one. You know, the Chevy 350, ubiquitous. They are just, you know, sitting in people's backyards sometimes. But
yeah, I mean, these things are so expensive. They literally are an investment in a way. You know, you're ponying up $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for a vehicle. You kind of want that thing to last, I would think.
Indeed. Talking with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Have a question or a comment on vehicles and maybe a question about something you're thinking about buying, too. We're going to have his latest review coming up here in just a moment. And then any of your calls that you wanted to talk to Eric about. Eric will be right back. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED.
It's the Bill Myers Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
Back with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Great site. You need to be there. I go there practically every day. By the way, Eric, you were hoping not to say Kyiv this morning, but Zelensky's in front of the United Nations right now as we speak, and I think it's going to be begging for more money. And so just be duly informed, okay, on that.
Yeah, well, that's somewhat preferable to him being in Pennsylvania with the governor of the state autographing bombs that are going to be sent at our expense to Russia.
Yeah, it does seem something really odd about that, I know. All right, let us head to the phones because this is the caller portion of the EP Autos Wheels Up Wednesday, and we go first to Jeff in Selma. Jeff, you want to talk about synthetic lubricants. You're with Eric.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. Having been a rep for synthetic lubricants, which will remain unnamed, the oxidation stability of a synthetic lubricant is why how they get the extended oil changes. But as Eric well knows, that blow-by from combustion has moisture involved with it, and which is where you develop most of your sludge, the moisture and the contaminants. Now, my engines around here, I don't have this issue, because they all have the self-changing oil in them.
Self-changing oil?
Yeah, about every 1,000 miles, you got to put in 2 quarts.
Oh!
I knew that was coming.
Okay. So, in other words, really loose oil rings on the pistons. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. But, yeah, the extended oil changes was the oxidation stability of synthetic lubricants, which I had a 82 Ford Escort with 1.9, and I put 20,000 miles on that with synthetic oil, pulled the dipstick out, and it was clean as the day that I put it in there.
No
but
kidding.
That was a tight engine. It wasn't getting much blow-by.
Yeah. All right. Hey, I really appreciate that. Anything else you wanted to mention here, Jeff?
No, I'm done.
Okay. No, good. I just want to make sure I got all your points in there because, my thing is I use synthetic oil on all my vehicles, Eric, but I still change them rapidly. Or yep. I change them often. And I know that some people are saying that is, I don't think that's wasteful at all. From everything that I've been able to see, the longer that you have it circulating around there, it doesn't matter how high quality it is. You know, there's still going to be dirt and combustion byproducts in there that you're not going to be able to get rid of except by changing the oil. That's just all there is to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the main advantages of the synthetics is at the extremes, at the extremes of heat and cold and pressure. That's the chief advantage of the synthetics, and that's one of the reasons why they do use them commonly in modern engines, because they operate under more extreme conditions, particularly the turbocharged ones.
What do you think, though, about this trend? I'm seeing such thin oils out there now, like mm-hmm. 0W15
yeah.
and stuff
yep.
like that. I mean, that stuff's like, I swear it's like you're pouring water into the crankcase.
It's compliance oil.
Really?
Believe it or not, the only reason that they're using oils with that viscosity is because they can eke out fractional gains in gas mileage and reduce emissions fractionally in that manner. Is it good for the engine? Is it good for you? Probably not.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see a host of more blown-up engines at an early date because of lack of viscosity at hot or high RPM. I kind of wonder about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hmm.
Eric Peters with me. Let's go to Gene. Not so crazy Gene in White City. Hello, Gene.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine. What did you want to say to Eric?
Well, I remember a time in my late teens when I first started to drive that we did not have to get insurance. And it depended on the people being able to drive without some kind of a backup system if you failed.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I've never experienced that. When did you grow up that didn't have to have car insurance?
Well, it had to be around the early 70s.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I didn't start driving till the late 70s.
It wasn't all that long ago, though I guess 40 or 50 years ago is a long time ago.
Yeah.
As a general principle, my thoughts on it are this. I don't believe that it's right to make people pay for harms and damages that they haven't caused. Now, if you do cause damage and harm, then of course you ought to be fully accountable and responsible for what you've done. But otherwise, it just strikes me as wrong to take money out of people's pockets by force and make them pay for something they didn't do.
All right. I appreciate the call there, Gene, and stay not so crazy, all right? Shade before 7. Eric, before we take off, and this is it's really interesting. There aren't many cars left out there on the car dealerships. I guess we should just start calling them transportation dealerships rather than car dealerships, car lots, mm-hmm. because they're not really cars. There aren't many cars any longer. Most of them are, trucks?
A lot crossovers of, and trucks.
Crossovers yeah. and trucks, yeah, vans, things like that. But there's a car that you reviewed this week, the 2025 Cadillac CT5. And I'll tell you, it looks like they've done a great job with this one. Why don't you break down the highs and lows of it?
Yeah, okay? I mean, they have it. Not only is it a car, a sedan, but it's a good one. You know, GM actually still makes a few of those. It's just they don't do a very eager job of publishing information about it. I think they're kind of somewhat embarrassed about them because they're such a counterpoint to what they do want to get you into, which is a battery-powered vehicle.
Right.
But anyway, this thing is available with the usual 2.0 turbo engine, but you can get it with a twin-turbo V6, and you can get it with a supercharged V8 and a manual transmission, which really makes it stand out.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly. You talked about an American car that you could actually buy with a V8. I thought that was mm-hmm. non-existent these days.
Almost. Now, it's not inexpensive, but at least you can still get it. But what you can get that's not too particularly expensive is that sweet twin-turbo V6, which GM, to its great credit, doesn't force you to go into a higher trim to get.
Oh.
You can start with the base trim, which starts around, what was it, a 47-ish thousand? I can't remember offhand. But it's an a la carte option. It's about $3,500, and you can upgrade to this twin-turbo V6 that makes 330 horsepower, I believe it is. And, you know, that's a heck of a package, especially if you look at what you get for a lot more money from BMW or Mercedes, for instance.
Now, what was that that trim or that version of the Cadillac that has the 660-something horsepower in it? Which
yeah,
one is that?
Yeah, that's called the Blackwing.
The Blackwing, okay.
And, you know, ironically, you think about this. It's a sedan with a Corvette's V8 with a manual transmission, and you can't even get a manual transmission in the
Corvette
anymore. It's automatic only.
Oh, wow, that's wild. So that that Blackwing, though, the Cadillac Blackwing, mm-hmm. that in some ways is the ultimate sleeper, right? Because I'd be willing to bet you that most cops and people would see you going by, oh, it's just a Cadillac, right? Okay, it goes fast.
Yeah, it looks like a really nice Cadillac sedan. Uh-huh. It doesn't look like a Corvette, you know, and if you've driven a Corvette or any other car that looks like that, you know what it's like driving one of those things. Every cop swivels around to look at you, and if you're doing 57 and a 55, you're probably going to get a ticket.
Exactly, all right. But this one can go practically just as fast as the vet. And you can
yep.
shift it manually, which is even cooler. Wow.
And you can carry five people in it.
All right. Now, as far as the interior and such, is it of Cadillac level? Would you say it's right up there with
everybody
else? Well,
yeah, this is kind of an interesting thing. For the new model year for 2025, they have decided to put a massive 33-inch LCD sweeping touchscreen across the entire dashboard.
My gosh, they put both. That's the size of a TV. They put a 33-inch TV in your dash, huh?
Yeah. Now, you know, again, this is really subjective. I personally am not a big fan. I like analog stuff, but of yeah. course, I'm starting to geese, I guess, and so that shows my age. But you know, people who buy cars like this are tech hip and tech savvy, and they'll probably really like it.
Okay. So starting at about 46-47 grand,
yep.
which is not the worst price for something of this kind of technical quality, though.
No, it's really. 10 grand less mm-hmm. than a comparable BMW 5 or a Mercedes E-Class. And the real kicker is, you know, you can opt for that twin-turbo V6 and still come in thousands of dollars less than those two competitors with their four-cylinder engines.
Very good. Well, it's great to hear about this 2025 Cadillac CT5. You can read all the details on epautos.com, along with how long is a lifetime, and at least he's not a communist, you know, which makes me laugh every time I see it. Let me go to the next line here. Take one more call before we cut Lewis
okay.
Eric back on his day job. How you doing? Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning,
hey,
Eric,
Bob,
Shannon, Medford.
Hey.
Hey, talk about oil changes.
Yeah.
We need to rewatch the Gnome Mobile by Walt Disney.
The what?
The Gnome Mobile movie.
Oh, the Gnome Mobile. Never saw that.
When I'm not hip either.
Oh,
what is that?
Good golly. That was your era, too, as a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
How
you got to watch it. It talks about oil changes in a Phaeton. Rolls Royce, and it has forest metaphors in it and all kinds of wonderful things. It was one of Disney's movies that he actually directed. And I know you're not a big fan of Disney, but it's well worth watching. It's auto-related, it's forest-related, and all kinds of
Okay, well, I was watching. I don't mind Disney then. I'm talking about Disney now. You know,
right.
now if they were doing the oil change, the oil change technician would have to be trans in order to, you know... be on a Disney film. I don't know. But, hey, thanks, Bob. Let me go to another line here for Eric before we take off. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hi, this is Vicky from the Applegate.
Vicky, you're on with Eric. What's on your mind?
Hi, Eric. Yeah, I just was going to comment on the fact that you don't have to change transmission fluids about... Oh, my God. I think it was in 2013 I bought a Kia Sorento, which I've always been an American car person. And we ended up getting this Kia. And I came from a mechanic family, so the first car I had was the 68 Mercury Comet, which I could work on myself, oil, water, you know, all that stuff. The first time I lifted up my hood, everything's covered. I've never put water in it. I have done oil changes, but you can't find any. I mean, I don't know where anything is in this car.
What would you say to that, Eric? Does she have a point about that with the the covers and the trim that they put in the engine compartment? Yeah, that is kind of new, but I think you can still get to the places you have to add fluids,
well,
don't you?
Well, it depends, and increasingly less so. Now, almost all the new cars have these acoustic plastic covers that they put on top of the engine that are a sound suppression thing, and they're also a cheap thing that they do to hide what would otherwise be an ugly engine. And, you know, it used to be that dealers would proudly pop the hood to show you what's under there, and there might be a nice, attractive-looking engine. Now they all look the same. They've got that plastic cover on them. But a lot of new cars don't have a physical dipstick anymore. They use electronic sensors, and you have to go to the touchscreen inside the car, push a button, and then the thing tells you what the oil level is.
Is that the way it is for your Kia, Vicky? Do you know?
Yeah, I've never. My husband has actually done the oil changes on it.
Yeah.
Which he was kind of hesitant because it's so not like a normal car. We actually have a 72 Ford Courier pickup, and it's mustard colored. And
I think they all were back then, if I remember, correctly.
It is like I mean, he's changed out the fuse box. He's changed the plugs, the wires. I mean, that's something that you can work on. You know?
Well, these are a little more inaccessible. They're all that way. All the modern cars, I guess, are a little more inaccessible. Wouldn't that be fair?
You know, it's not. That's generally true, but there are some really notable exceptions. For example, Subaru mounts the oil filter right there on top of the engine. I mean, you don't even need a tool. You can just put your hand on it and remove it.
Oh,
so, you know,
okay.
Wow.
There are some that are better than others.
Oh, wow. Well, I will never, you know, my dad, he always had 44s. He had Chevys, Dodges. And the first car I wanted was a Honda Civic. And he was like, I don't have any parts for that. And I don't know how to work on that. So that's how I got the Mercury Comet, which we called her Beastie. She was pea green, like split pea green.
Okay.
But I'm telling you, I could let her sit for 6 months, clean the battery terminals, give her some gas in the carb, and she'd start right up.
Try that with an electric vehicle not plugged in for 6 months. Get back to me, Vicky, okay?
Yeah, and you know, it's a measure of our times that Comet, which was the Mercury version of the Ford Maverick at the time, is now considered a collectible, and you'd be paying a pretty penny to get another one nowadays.
All right, so see if you can track down your Beastie there, Vicky. I appreciate the call, and thanks for making it. And Eric, always appreciate your time and taking a break from writing. You're going to be heading out and doing maybe some driving around for the next review for next week, and what might that be?
Well, when it gets here, looks like a compliance car is coming.
Oh, no. What's the compliance car?
It's the battery-powered, resurrected version of the Fiat 500, the 500E for EV.
Oh, okay. Now, the thing is, the gas-powered version of the Fiat 500 was insanely heavy for its size. I can't imagine what the electrical version is going to be like.
Yeah, well, but the thing was, it was also insanely cheap. A friend of mine got one on my recommendation. It was about $15,000 brand new.
Oh.
And whereas this thing is, I think it's pushing $40,000 for essentially the same thing that goes a third as far.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to the review. We'll see it on EP Autos, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday, Eric, okay?
Sounds good, Bill. Thank you.
EPAutos.com. It's 8 minutes after 7. KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, and KBXG Grants Pass is where you are.